The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 405 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Anne L. And we welcome Art of Tea as this episode's sponsor. Definitely check out their Outlander collection. We will talk a little bit more about that later in the show.
And now, on to our read-along. It feels like it was so long ago, and yet it was just yesterday I was saying that.
Our read-along?
Yeah. Like, we only had, like, 8 weeks when we weren't read-alonging.
That was February. All of March, all of April. Yeah, like, maybe 9 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, it was, we were already back in it before I knew it. Anyway, we are beginning our An Echo in the Bone read-along. This week, we will be starting with Chapter 1. So it's Part A, A Troubling of the Waters, Chapter 1, Sometimes They're Really Dead.
Wilmington, Colony of North Carolina, July 1776. So Stephen Bonnet's gone.
This was jarring. This isn't where they left them at the last one, right?
In 6, it's where we left Bree and Roger, certainly.
Okay.
Well, no, because Bree and Roger, we know they went poof.
Because they went and met with William someplace else in town after this, I thought.
No, this was the last time they met.
Okay.
So Stephen Bonnet's gone, right? He has just been executed, courtesy of the government and also of Bree. He's mostly gone. He's eaten. Most of him is dissolved. It's not. It's by eaten by crocodiles and fish and everything. William is remembering the last time seeing Bree. So this is just a few days. So the opening thing, like Summer and I talking about we're seeing through William's eyes is a memory of William's. So this is just a few days after Bonnet was executed because the body is still there. So, or his memories are a few days after, I should say. Kate O. writes, I haven't read this book in a while, so it was a bit odd being more recently in the world of the show, back in a timeline where Stephen Bonnet has only just died. I don't really mind that they killed him earlier in the show, as he is gone for so long. In book 6, you almost forget about him, and then he pops up again like, oh yeah, we've got to tie up the story.
Whoops.
Summer said this, and I think in our last episode, talking about the season 6 finale, that it's the first time where we're kind of going on further than the show has gone, because the show has not finished up book 6, right? So yeah, it's definitely right. It's a weird kind of window in time. So in this memory that William is having, so we're there with the Mackenzies and with William. So Roger scoops up Jem. Jem had wanted to see the pirate get eaten, and they take...
You should do.
In the middle of taking their leave, William wanted them to stay a little bit longer, but they need to go.
Yeah, they do. He's having some impure thoughts about his sister that he doesn't know is his sister, who's married.
This little scene here was the last meeting that, and it was due to Bree, because Bree knew they were going away forever. And she had talked to Jamie and Lord John, and Jamie had arranged it with Lord John. But this was the price for her silence, remember? She was going to full on tell him. She was going to tell him what's what. Jamie was like, oh, Lord, no. And of course, even more so, John was like, oh, gosh, no. So this was the price of her silence. She wanted one more meeting with him and their family. So remember, Bree and Roger know all about William. William has no clue. At this meeting, Jem says, because, you know, William's in his uniform, and Jem says that his grandsires killed lots of men, probably specifically meaning
British soldiers.
Yeah. And Roger's like, oh, no, you know very well your brother. You know very well that this is not, you know, we don't talk about this. And then Jem says, well, at least he says that the king can kiss his arse. And he says that his grandfather had said this. And Roger's like, don't you lie. Don't lie about that. That is not true. And he's like, no, that's true. But Granny said it. And they're like, well, yeah, that's true. Claire absolutely said it. Kate O writes, I do love all of Jemmy's very honest interjections and Bree and Roger's reactions. Small children can be so embarrassingly honest in public, and this scene is so very real. And then on to the father's chance to embarrass the child. It's a wonderful thing when the tables are finally turned and you get to poke a bit of fun at them. So after the Mackenzies are gone for good, or for real, William goes back to his men, and they're who have seen this exchange from a distance, and they're asking, like, who are those people? Who is that really tall, giantess redhead? And they're speaking rather suggestively of Bree, and one of them remarks that Bree is the dude that apparently has a thing for giantesses. His name is Dobson, and one of them says, "Dude, she's twice your size." So Dobson's apparently kind of a short dude.
He didn't even see her face.
He could. Well,
he's like, I didn't even make it that far.
Well, an older dude in charge, a Sergeant Cutter, came out, and he's asking these men, where are the troops? What's going on? William says that his troops are guarding the governor's palace and that he has personally been given leave to dine with his father, who just then comes out of a nearby tavern.
Grange.
Just a little bit. Apparently, Lord John was a friend of Sergeant Cutter's, and they start to chat of old times. Now, as the officers relax, Dobson returns to the matter of the redhead, and he asks William to find out where she's staying. Yeah, no, not going to happen.
Okay, creepy dude.
Lord John then asks William to introduce his friends to him. Lord John's face is red when he asks him this, and William knows that he's heard everything that these dudes have said about Bree's face and her boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Later, William follows his father, who asks after the Mackenzies. William was rather struck by the appearance of Mrs. Mackenzie, and Lord John confirms that he's known them, all the Mackenzies and Frasers, for a while. Quote, she is the daughter of one of my oldest friends, Mr. James Fraser. Do you recall him by chance? Unquote. William does piece it together. It was his father's friends from the mountains, and William remembers his trip there when his father, Lord John, was sick with the measles. It had been a very scary time for him. He had just lost the only mother he ever knew about a month before that. And he, of course, was extremely worried that he would lose his father, too. The only specific memory he seems to have of Jamie is that he seems to remember that Mr. Fraser had taken him fishing. And then, of course, Lord John says, well, and then there's that other thing that happened.
I was going to say, he very quickly remembered the other thing.
Yes, and he was, again, embarrassed, as you should be, because it is funny. He'd fallen into the privy. This is drums of autumn. He had fallen in. So the plan is they're going to dine with a man named Captain Richardson. And they're going to have this dinner at the house of a Mr. Bell. So when they get there, through William's eyes, or through his description, we're given Richardson's description as middle-aged, well-groomed, and well-tailored, but without any notable style. And, quote, a face you couldn't pick out of a crowd 2 minutes after seeing it, unquote.
That could be helpful and hurtful because you could have the anonymity of being able to, you know, do anything and have nobody remember you later for it. But then at the same time, no one will ever remember you for anything.
Well, there's also two young ladies, the Mrs. Bell, who were there at the dinner, and they were introduced to William. It was mutual. They were interested in William, and it was mutual. William and the ladies at different times.
Speaking of William, we should have mentioned this. I forgot because we rarely get a chance to do this anymore. There was casting news.
Oh, Lord.
They cast William for next season. Yes, Charles Van Der Vaart.
And he's Canadian, actually. He's 21 and Canadian.
He is Canadian.
The Mrs. Bell and William, it's a mutual kind of interest. William played footsie during dinner with one of them. And then later on, I think, with the other one. They made eyeball plans outside to meet outside after dinner. As for whether they'd be long in Wilmington, Sir Peter answers, meaning him and his daughters, likely not long. So William catches, now Diana uses the word intercepted. So William, she writes, William intercepted. But William catches a look between Richardson and his father. Quote, and for the first time began to wonder. His father had distinctly said they were dining with a Captain Richardson, meaning that a meeting with the captain was the point of the evening. Why? Unquote. Then he had more eye footsie with one of the misses and forgot all about Richardson. Later, when the dudes went out to smoke or whatever the dudes do at a certain point in dinner, he was left at the table with Richardson while Lord John was chatting it up with Mr. Bell. And so Richardson starts to speak to William and he goes, I have a proposition. I don't know what voice that was. That was just a Richardson. I won't do that again. Now, William is interested when he hears this. Richardson was a captain of light dragoons and he was on detached duty. Detached from what? He did not know. But he says, quote, I am charged with the gathering of intelligence in the Southern Department. Not that I am in command of such operations, but a small part of them, unquote. Now, William is not interested in spying, he says. But Richardson says, no worries. I want a messenger.
Doesn't like every little boy want to be a spy?
Well, he's no longer like a little
superhero.
Boy.
But yeah, you don't forget that feeling, though, of wanting to be that, like, undercover James Bond.
Well, yeah, but they didn't grow up with TV.
Ugh, fine.
So he is only interested in a messenger, he assures him. The captain had information regarding local conditions in the Carolinas and now he was required to send this information to his commander of the commander of the Northern Department, a General Howe in Halifax. Lord John speaks highly of William. So this is Richardson saying this. Richardson has a little bit of knowledge of William. Lord John speaks highly of his son. And William has traveled extensively in North Carolina and Virginia. Richardson says, quote, that is a valuable attribute. You will appreciate that I do not want my messenger to disappear into the dismal swamp, never to be seen again, unquote. So William was getting wrapped up in the romanticism of being a spy messenger. He's starting to think of himself maybe doing this. And he asks, well, what happens at the other end once I deliver this message or what would happen? And Richardson tells him, well, once you're in the North, you would be able to join General Howe's staff if that is something that General Howe wanted. And William asks him for some time. He's like, can I sleep on it and get back to you tomorrow? And he says, yes. William had indeed had a chance to flirt with one of the misses, even though it's off page. We find out that he had a kiss. He was able to get a kiss from one of them, even though we don't see them flirt on the page. And as he and Lord John walk home or walk back to their inn, they talk about Richardson's proposal. Now, John thinks it's a good opportunity for advancement.
Why does he need to advance? He's rich.
Well, I think it's the same question as why did he even need to join the military? He's rich. He didn't need to. I think he wants to be active or he wants to be doing something and not just, you know, be an Earl or have his, you know, be a person in government, basically. He wants to be good for something. He wants to go do some things before he settles down, I guess.
The Outlander Collection is a limited release artisanal tea bundle created by Art of Tea in partnership with Sony to celebrate our favorite TV show. The Outlander Collection contains two distinct blends inspired by the series' dynamic lead characters.
Like Outlander's fearless heroine, Claire, English Rose is bright and vibrant, a refreshing blend of loose-leaf green tea and rose petals that is simultaneously bold and delicate. Scottish Highlander, like Jamie, is robust, strong, and smooth. A full-bodied Scottish breakfast-style black tea, ideal for starting the day.
Art of Tea is on a mission to impact as many lives as possible by creating healthy, delicious, and sustainable brews and blends. Since its inception in 2004, Art of Tea has become a leading purveyor of organic and specialty teas using ingredients rooted in Ayurveda, health, and wellness. All Art of Tea products are hand-blended, made to order, and designed to help bring you grounding moments of peace, serenity, and joy.
Art of Tea believes in using only the highest quality ingredients. It hand blends and packs all their whole leaf teas in-house in Los Angeles. Every time you order from Art of Tea, your order will be made fresh just for you. They have created award-winning tea blends for Wolfgang Puck restaurants, the Peninsula Hotels, Huntington Library and Botanical Gardens, the Getty, the Ritz-Carlton, and more.
Art of Tea also have a collection of teaware and tea gifts, including at-home matcha kits, teapots, mugs, and a candle in their signature Earl Grey cream scent. You can also take their tea quiz for personalized recommendations about what you would enjoy best based on your preferences and lifestyle.
They have over 100 tea blends to choose from. They also provide ample educational resources through their blog, including the history of tea, the benefits of drinking tea, recipes, tea steeping recommendations, and so much more.
Just for our listeners, Art of Tea has a very special offer. For a limited time, you can use code OUTLANDER25 at www.artoftea.com for 25% off the Outlander collection.
You won't find this offer anywhere else, and it's exclusive for the Outlander podcast community only. Again, use code OUTLANDER25 at www.artoftea.com. for 25% off the Outlander Collection.
The Outlander Collection is a limited release artisanal tea bundle created by Art of Tea in partnership with Sony to celebrate our favorite TV show. The Outlander Collection contains two distinct blends inspired by the series' dynamic lead characters.
Like Outlander's fearless heroine, Claire, English Rose is bright and vibrant, a refreshing blend of loose-leaf green tea and rose petals that is simultaneously bold and delicate. Scottish Highlander, like Jamie, is robust, strong, and smooth. A full-bodied Scottish breakfast-style black tea, ideal for starting the day.
Art of Tea is on a mission to impact as many lives as possible by creating healthy, delicious, and sustainable brews and blends. Since its inception in 2004, Art of Tea has become a leading purveyor of organic and specialty teas using ingredients rooted in Ayurveda, health, and wellness. All Art of Tea products are hand-blended, made to order, and designed to help bring you grounding moments of peace, serenity, and joy.
Art of Tea believes in using only the highest quality ingredients. It hand blends and packs all their whole leaf teas in-house in Los Angeles. Every time you order from Art of Tea, your order will be made fresh just for you. They have created award-winning tea blends for Wolfgang Puck restaurants, the Peninsula Hotels, Huntington Library and Botanical Gardens, the Getty, the Ritz-Carlton, and more.
Art of Tea also have a collection of teaware and tea gifts, including at-home matcha kits, teapots, mugs, and a candle in their signature Earl Grey cream scent. You can also take their tea quiz for personalized recommendations about what you would enjoy best based on your preferences and lifestyle.
They have over 100 tea blends to choose from. They also provide ample educational resources through their blog, including the history of tea, the benefits of drinking tea, recipes, tea steeping recommendations, and so much more.
Just for our listeners, Art of Tea has a very special offer. For a limited time, you can use code OUTLANDER25 at www.artoftea.com for 25% off the Outlander collection.
You won't find this offer anywhere else. And it's exclusive for the Outlander podcast community only. Again, use code OUTLANDER25 at www.artoftea.com for 25% off the Outlander collection. Now, it's a good opportunity for advancement, but there's also danger involved. They talk of how the Continentals, because William's like, I mean, it's basically there's like a road all the way up. Like, it's a straight shot pretty much. And John's like, well, I mean, you know, there's like, if not a war now, like there's battles, right? There's a lot of conflict, and there's going to be a ton of Continentals who are on the road the entire way. Just think about it. That's danger. Just traveling. And William says that he's going to do it. He'll do it. At the inn, William bade Lord John goodnight, but didn't return at once to his own lodgings. Instead, he wandered out along the quay, restless, unready for sleep. There would be a day or two before he must go, he thought, and he wondered whether he might see the blue-eyed Mrs. Mackenzie again. Lord John, standing in front of the inn, and he's thinking about William and the danger and General Howe versus General Clinton and all the Brotherhood of the Blade. So all these people and these things that he knows about. And he is also not ready to go in and spend the evening basically tossing and turning. So he goes for a walk to clear his mind. Once he's done clearing his mind, he comes back to the inn and goes inside. Then we see through his eyes, Lord John is describing the scene that he had seen. John had been in an upper room of some building with Jamie, looking down on William and Roger and Bree at their first and last meeting. And he'd been the one to go get Bree the boat when she wanted to go out and kill the pirate, because of course he knows the history there. So Lord John has a lot of thoughts about William and his new assignment, and thinks about William and William's sister and Jamie and everything. And then he's remembering what he had seen from standing next to or being with Jamie as they looked out on the street and watched their kids saying, you know, meeting for the first and last time. And he was like almost apoplectic at this whole thing. He was so afraid it was going to go sideways. But it didn't. He also has a letter in his pocket from a Sir George Germain, who knows? And it has William's name on it. He'd taken it. He'd basically stolen it or taken it out of a bunch of letters before it had a chance to get to William. And he says he decided to wait a few weeks. And when he finally responded to the letter, he would be able to say truthfully that William wasn't present when the letter was received, because the letter had recalled William to England.
Hmm.
Now, we don't get details of what that means. Like, you know, because if, yes, Lord John is his stepfather and his legal stepfather, right? But Lord John is not, especially now that William is of age or almost of age, Lord John is not, I don't believe, the person who can be in charge of William's estates. I don't believe, maybe when he was much younger, I don't know. But my belief is, my guess is that Sir George Germain or Germain is somehow involved with the this is going to sound funny, the Earl side of the Earlness duties of William, meaning the only person who could, you know, besides like obviously someone the level of a king or something, the only person or entity who would have the authority to recall William would be his supervisor or his, you know, his general, right? Or someone above him in rank, or someone who was involved with the peerage. You're of age now. It's time for you to take your place as an earl. Like, do your job, dude. So that's what I get from this George Germain dude. Because why else would he be recalled to England other than to do his formal duty as an earl, right? So as as you think about that, even though Lord John is the one who said, this is a little, you know, it's a little, he did not say shady, but he did say, this is dangerous. This task that you're thinking of doing for Richardson, this is dangerous. Even though he says that several times, he's not stopping him. I mean, first of all, William's an adult, but he also sees the benefit. Lord John is there with William telling him, you know, not stopping him. But he's even saying, you know, think about this seriously, because there is danger in this errand, in this task, in this job.
Right. But it's not without benefit.
Potential benefit. But I don't know that Lord John is interested in. I mean, he would be happy if his son got accolades and happy if his son got a benefit. But I think the benefit that Lord John is seeing, the biggest benefit, at least in the short term, is having him out of Dodge, because he does not want Will. He stole this letter. He does not want William to know that he's been recalled to England.
Mm-hmm.
So having him gone, even with some danger, protects him from being called back to England, at least right then. So I think, and I don't think that's to protect William, because I don't think William would be hurt going back to England. He may not want to go, but I don't think that's dangerous, except the sea voyage, right? I think that part is selfish, and I understand it, and I'm not blaming it, and I'm not dogging on him. I think that part is selfish of Lord John, because he doesn't want his son to leave, and I get it.
But think of how different the story would have gone if he had.
There wouldn't have been a story. What, are we going to follow him along in England?
Well, no, I'm just saying, if he went back, he probably would have gotten super ingrained in being a lord, and he never would have questioned his parentage. He never would have done probably any of the things that he did in the series.
So Lord John's like, okay, I've got all this thinking done. I think I may not, you know, I'm not going to maybe be totally resting easily tonight, but you know, sometimes you just at some point you got to just call it and go, and you know, decide to go in. So he goes back to the inn, and as he stops at the bar or wherever, and he asks for a bottle of wine to be brought up to his room. But he is told that, oh, the gentleman already took it up.
Mm-hmm.
The who's it what's? The what's it who's he? And she's like, oh, by the way, and he also had two glasses with him. So she's like, I don't think he wanted to drink it all himself. Mm. And she also says it was a French gentleman. And she said it was, the name was like Beau something. And of course it was a Mr. Beauchamp.
Is this name like the most common name?
I mean, we've only met two people, some.
I know, but since this book began, that's the first time I heard this name.
Yeah, well, that doesn't mean it's common if only two people that you've met.
Yeah, but in one book series? Usually. I mean, it's not like it's Smith. You know, where it's like the most common name in wherever. And it's just, I think it's weird with all of the breadth of names that she's come up with in the last however many books, that she's doubling this one down and just letting it happen.
Well, we don't know much about it. And Diana has been pretty mum. People have asked, is there any possible relationship, especially, well, French, yes, but is there any possible relationship to Claire's Beecham and this Beecham? And that has not been answered. It hasn't been supported yet. So Lord John goes up to his room, kind of like, you know, the sweat dripping down his back. He's like, it's already like a warm, humid, disgusting, it's probably beautiful, but a warm, humid, disgusting night, right? And he's like, I gotta call it. So he goes upstairs, and now he's been told, there's someone in your room, by the way. Oh Lord. And it's someone whom he hasn't seen in a long time, but also is probably someone he doesn't really want to see. And this person, he says straight up, Diana Wright is not at all to be trusted. So this was a Mr. Beauchamp. He was an active French intelligence agent. He knew of him. He had heard of Beauchamp. He had, if not communicated with him. He had been aware of him. They were aware of each other. And he ran in French intelligence circles, and Lord John ran in English in English intelligence circles. So they were aware of each other's names and personages, but they hadn't met, at least as these characters. And we know, and we learn why. So Lord John gives us a name, Perseverance Wainwright. So a Mr. Beauchamp is someone he otherwise knew as Perseverance or Percy when he was friends, lovers, whatever their relationship was, however he knew him, in whatever capacity, he was known as Perseverance. So he has never, so the last time he saw this person, he was Percy. Now he has a new identity, and it's Beauchamp. So we find out about how Percy became Beauchamp, or how he began to be in those circles. He tells John that he'd married the sister of the Baron Amandine, whose family name was Beauchamp. And so he took it. And even though he's married to the sister of the Baron, sometimes he sleeps with the Baron, sometimes he sleeps with the sister, and sometimes both. Although the sister she really has a thing for her, a different dude who's her lover, I think. But why is he here? Why show up at all in the colonies? Why specifically Lord John's room at the inn? Well, with all the, not dialogue necessarily, but with all the kind of the undercurrents, all the description that Diana gives us, we learn that they had been intimate. They were former lovers. They are former lovers. And John is basically here in this room representing England. And so Percy, or Beauchamp, is representing France. And he says also Canada. Percy says he has information to offer that could separate Washington from one of his chief officers. Lord John's like, oh, okay, what does France get out of it? And he's like, oh, land. They want the Northwest Territories back. So John is thinking, like, who the heck could I even take such an offer to? And he's like, and what does Percy want? So I know what France wants, but what does Percy get out of this? Percy says he wants to find a man named James Fraser, and only mm-hmm. ask him a few questions. That's it. Later on, Percy starts to say something about William, and Lord John goes nuts and grabs hold of him. And we don't even know what he was about to say or starting to say about William, but Lord John's like, we don't talk about the kid. Nope. And we learn from what he says to Beauchamp that the last time they'd seen each other, Lord John had almost shot him. John tells him to stay away from William and to go back to France. And with that, Lord John takes off into the night, leaving Beauchamp in his own room. He decided, he's like,
yeah, I was like, dang, he's like, good day, sir. I mean, wait, that was my room.
But he can't stop because he's got to make his exit.
His exit.
And he's like, okay, fine. I'll talk to Cutter and I'll get leave or whatever it is to I'll stay somewhere else tonight. And in the morning, his number one goal is to make sure that the Frasers and William were all safely out of Wilmington. And Kate O finishes us off with, she says, I think this is the first time we ever have a chapter from William's perspective. And I think she's right. It shifts between William and John, right? And it's not first person, but it is from, it's the third person, but it is from his perspective. And that's true. I think it is the first time. I don't think we definitely didn't have this much about William, this long of a stretch with William in book six.
No, because he wasn't in most of it.
Yeah.
He just appeared at the very, very end.
And the introduction, Kate O continues, the introduction of Beauchamp reminds me that book seven takes what is an already complicated cavalcade of characters to a whole new level. More new characters and familiar characters who now get their own points of view and an explosion of storylines. And yep, if you thought book six was absolutely bonkerdonks, welcome to book seven and on, because book seven makes it becomes like a worldly gig. Book eight is even worse. Book 9, to me, actually was easier than book 8 as far as
being so divided. Well, everyone's in the same place.
Well, that's true. That's true. You get rid of specific, you get rid of the necessity for specifically separate arcs or storylines that aren't overlapping much, if not at all, when people are in the same place. Yes. Yeah. So what did you think about this chapter? I got to say, I did not realize how long it was. I forgot how much, how comparatively little dialogue there was and so much. I don't know if I call it exposition. I guess you could call it exposition. But basically, yes, Diana did her weaving. She brought us up to date with, you know, not a lot of detail, but the history of, we don't have intimate detail of knowing why Brianna wanted the pirate killed. Like, who cares? We as readers already know. But if you're picking this book up for the first time and you've never read another book or seen the show, I don't think you'd understand why she wanted him shot, but you do understand that she did want him shot. So I guess that's enough for now. But anyway, there she had a little bit of backstory in there, but we have a lot of intro starting here, not a fill-in, but intro, right? Telling us, we learn about Percy. We learn about Richardson. Was Richardson even mentioned in the end of 6?
I don't remember. I do remember that they ended 6 by reintroducing us to the fact that William is still alive. And then they started 7 back with William being like, okay, we kind of brought him up in the last of the thing, but we didn't give you enough information yet. So
the end of 6, we have the hello and goodbye of William and Bree and all them. And then, and so we get kind of
a
refresher,
of,
okay, don't forget there was this meeting and before they poof gone. And I think we're sitting with William more, we're sitting again a lot with Lord John, and we're not sitting with Richardson and we're not sitting with Percy, but we're learning more about them through Lord John's and William's experiences. There's a lot to go. We just started, but it's going to be what it's going to be.
And it's going to take as long as it takes. What do we have coming up in the next few weeks?
That's a good point. We are going to be, God willing, and the rain don't, what is it? Quick willing? creek God rise, willing and the creek don't rise?
Creek don't rise, yeah.
Yes, we will be on our third Pot Abroad tour of Scotland. So after these episodes go up, this chapter 1, we will not have another one until the first weekend in June, because we will be, oh, that's not true. Sorry, we have one more weekend before we go. We can most likely do one next week. We'll see. Our aim, if we do, though, it would be, I think we're combining two chapters based on the length, but we should have, if we have one more episode before our mini hiatus, it would be another, obviously, one more read-along chapter. But no more than one. And then after that, we'll be back in June.
But follow along on all our socials, because while we may not be putting out a new episode, we will be present socially to follow along on our adventures.
Yes. So again, a special thanks to co-producer Anne L. And to find out more how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you want to join us next week to continue our An Echo in the Bone read-along, we will be continuing with chapters 2, and Sometimes They Aren't, and chapter 3 entitled Life for Life.
And if you haven't joined our text community, feel free to do so. Text HELLO in exactly that tone of voice to 916-659-5112.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, you can go to our Facebook group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you've been interested in any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can check out our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20
Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.